I'd like to introduce Bob Billmeyer as the next presenter.
All righty.
All right. Yes, I'm Robert Billmeyer. Good evening, lady and gentlemen. I live in the Oyster Rock community also, and I'm speaking as a local resident and also as a retired professional engineer. My wife and I have a personal interest in this application with concerns for the value of our house, with the effects on our lifestyle and our personal safety. And we're also worried about the disruption of the residential character of the area. And we feel that's important. We've invested a lot in retiring to this community. I'm part of the coalition, and I'm also a topic leader.
How long have you lived in this in the area?
3 years.
3 years, okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about the roadways around the rezoning request. And no one knows more about the roadways than the people who live right there. And it's surprising that anyone would want to put a shopping center here based on the traffic problems in the locale. First, I'm going to talk about the existing conditions for safety and all. We've talked about the CCPP. I don't think I need to give you a lot of information about that. You know, the intent of its practices is largely to make for safer roads by having the vehicles that are merging and exiting being traveling at the same speed, to do away with areas where they can be traveling at different speeds. We especially have trouble with pickup trucks with trailers, you know, crossing the road, and maybe not all the way. The key to all this is having properly designed ramps. The ramps need to be provided for high-speed exits and such. They have to be gradually graded so that have radii that are large enough that vehicles can come off the road quickly. Same thing for entering the road. It needs a lot of real estate to do that. And you see that at the overpasses in the Milford area, for example. They're very large, sweeping, very effective, and they have large clearance under the bridges. And we've already well established there's an overpass that goes at Cave Neck Road. The planning drawings that DOT put together for that intersection, their preliminary drawings, show an overpass which is very large, just like the ones in Milford. It leaves for the acceleration lanes and all that are needed. If that was to be constructed, it would overlap the existing mall area to a large extent. Also, I want to talk about the traffic study that was briefly mentioned as far as the existing conditions go. The developer also provided information about 14 intersections that DelDOT asked them to look at. And their analysis was that 9 of these intersections were shortly to become inadequate, whether there's an OTC or not. So that reflects on what our existing conditions already are. He also noted that 1 more would become inadequate with the OTC. And for Route 1 itself, the traffic has been getting worse. It's very noticeable. And the traffic study was done in 2013 in July. 1 year later, last August, what we experienced was the southbound traffic coming past Oyster Rock Road, where I live, was backed up as far as Route 16 and further on Saturdays. And not just within that 10 in the morning to 2 o'clock peak traffic period mentioned in the traffic study, well beyond that. It was difficult to even cross the road to get in or out of our community. And I think that might be a time frame when people in other communities go shopping at their malls and all. But in this case, there are special problems that they're going to be experiencing, which may make this a less desirable location. Locals know to avoid Route 1 on the weekends, especially Saturday. And you know, the people on Route 1 are crazed to reach their rental units, or crazed to go home. And you don't get in their way. They don't want to stop at Target or any place else. So get off the road and let them be. So what happens when you add a very large shopping center into the mix? We're talking 2,000 to 3,000 vehicles an hour during the peak travel times to the developers mentioned. That's a lot of traffic, and you would have to make special provisions for this. The developer in his submittal which we've been allowed to see, has repeatedly provided site plans with small radius turns and grade changes that harken back to the 1950s. Gary mentioned that the mall looks like something out of the 1950s. So do the roadways. And they're not such that you can make, you can't get on and off the road quickly with these. Let me see. Oh, the objective, these, they don't meet federal or state standards. The objective seems to be to use as little of the OTC property as possible. And you're not at all like the DOT prototype. Now, DOT has been doing reviews and helping to determine what is acceptable to them. The acceptable level, however, has not been the federal comparable layout that they have at the other intersection on the CCPP. They're using a lesser standard, essentially the minimum state standards. And it's, you know, less, uses less land, but it's also less safe than the other overpasses and merge lanes because of that. It makes no sense to have that with a high traffic location and having a lower level of safety. And of course, the motivation, we've mentioned the $8 million.
Excuse me, I beg your pardon, I should have asked you this earlier because we want to establish your credentials. You mentioned that you are a retired professional engineer.
Yes.
Are you no longer licensed in the state of Delaware? Or were you ever licensed in the state?
I was never licensed in the state of Delaware.
That's fine. That's fine. You're still an engineer.
Yeah.
and what could would you share with us what discipline you're from?
My primary discipline was electrical initially.
Okay.
I worked for a large civil engineering organization.
I understand. Okay.
So I got to do a lot of other work.
I just want to get that on the record. Okay. Go ahead. Okay, go
sure.
Ahead.
Sure. The $8 million has been mentioned. These overpasses are expensive. DelDOT has spent from the price range they gave to us was from $8.7 to $25 million per overpass. So the $8 million will certainly help a lot, but it shouldn't be something that would impact the evaluation of the design. Now, one of the problems with the latest design we saw, people coming south on Route 1 want to get in the shopping center. They'll take an exit ramp that ends at a T-intersection with Cave Neck Road. And they have to make a left turn to go over that overpass. Well, there's no traffic light or anything required. And they're going to have all the traffic that's on Cave Neck to wait for. Even if they put in a traffic light, that traffic is going to back up onto to Route 1. And that's certainly a traffic hazard. I haven't been advancing my slides. The traffic study follow-up from the 10 unsafe intersections that were mentioned in their report, the recommendations they made for those intersections were, for 8 of them, traffic lights. At 2 of the locations, they felt there were additional lanes needed on Route 1. So will these safety measures be taken by DelDOT? And when? Do they have funding for doing all that? Who pays for the original and the continuing costs? And the developer has said one thing. He says, not him. You know, he's kicked in the $8 million, and he feels that he shouldn't contribute towards anything else off the site. He's made his contribution. But wait, there's a little more. It's not just these 8 intersections or 10 intersections that are a problem. There's intersections that have been overlooked. You know, for example, anyone traveling from the west, from Millsboro, from Georgetown, coming up 113, they eventually wind up on Route 9 heading towards this shopping center. And the road they go up will be Hudson Road. It's the most direct. It's what your GPS tells you to do. Even my son coming from North Carolina, it takes him up Hudson Road. And up Hudson Road to Cave Neck. DelDOT didn't even give them that Route 9 and Hudson intersection on the intersections to look at. And when Hudson hits Cave Neck, the study shows that as being an acceptable location, no problems, nothing to work on there. But on Cave Neck, not far away, is an intersection which they identify as Dairy Farm and Cave Neck. It's actually Sweetbriar. And they call for lights at Sweetbriar and Cave Neck. They call for lights at Sweetbriar and Route 9. They probably would call for lights also at Hudson Road at both ends on Route 9 and also there on Cave Neck. And ones at Cave Neck would have to be coordinated because they're very close to one another. So it's getting to be very urban. And I start to wonder whether, you know, the traffic study is complete when there are a lot of little things like this. Probably a lot of things are unexpected are going to come up. And I had a notation about the temporary traffic signal. That is a surprise to us because we were told that would not happen. So that's safe for other circumstances, but I think
who told you that?
We've had meetings with DLDOT, and my understanding was that the temporary traffic signal was a no. But I'm sure they've had better conversations with more authoritative people than me.
Well, maybe. I wouldn't make that assumption.
Yeah, well. So anyway, we've told you of our concerns about the public safety, the traffic congestion, the accidents, the crime, the emergency response time. The CCPP properly implemented, which I don't think it may be, adds a degree of safety, but it will not solve these problems that we're concerned with. The real problem is that Route 1 is being, the goal is to make it into a high-speed road from one end to the other, high-speed Route 1. Unfortunately, it makes a virtual dead end at 5 points. There's nowhere to go at that point, and we wind up having backups. We have backups even in ordinary circumstances. Adding a shopping center destination to the formula here is not only illogical, but it's unsafe. You know, we expected that DLDOT would reject the concept based on this alone, problem solved. But that didn't happen. We expect DLDOT to turn down the developer's inadequate designs, but apparently they're expected to provide the developers with alternative solutions. But we feel that instead of providing with realistic alternatives, they provide them with inadequate alternatives. And I think that's very unfortunate. DLDOT mentioned that if they don't provide a workable solution to a property owner, then they have to buy the property themselves, which I'm a little confused about. We're getting into areas where I'm increasingly confused. And in fact, I was a little confused in part because I felt that the developer here had a conditional purchase, which did not go into effect unless the zoning was changed. So I may not be correct about how that would work. Certainly, I'm not an attorney. And at any rate, what they've done, DLDOT has passed the ball to you. It's your turn next to make some sort of decision. And we don't feel that the zoning change is realistic from a public safety perspective, and we feel it's not in the best interest of the citizens of the county. And please don't pass the ball. We'd like you to vote this down. Go ahead. Oh, well, thank you for your attention.
Okay.
And I would now like to reintroduce Rich Holtke. Maybe get you up to the
council.
Yeah, really. That's exactly right.
What's that?
You again.
Me again. Can't get rid of me.
You have to give us
your
name.
It's your fault. You let me come back again.
You have to give us your name again because the tape can't see you.
All right. Rich Holtkamp.
Thank you.
Painter's Mill. I'm going to make this brief because I know it's been a long presentation, and I know there are many other residents who want to offer their personal comments, and we don't want to take too much time away from that. The last couple of slides that I have for you is relates to the environment and the recharge area, the aquifer preservation. And one of the facts that we do like to present is that the comprehensive plan recommends that the impervious surface areas be limited to 50% of the site. And if you take the math and the calculations, the total acreages and the pervious surfaces that they are proposing, it's 78%. So that's well in excess of what the comprehensive plan would call for, a guideline, but that's what they call for. The site plan indicates that stormwater management ponds and a significant amount of impervious cover fall within the area of excellent groundwater recharge. Now, that's an obvious statement, I think, when you look at the plan. The developer understands that, but it's a fact that I think a lot of people need to understand that regardless of how much space is taken up with impervious services, there will be a reduction in the amount of area for freshwater recharge. Will it dry up all the wells in the area? Probably not, but it's just a step in the wrong direction. Maintenance of water levels through clean recharge in this unconfined aquifer is critical to the coastal communities due to the long-term risk of saltwater intrusion, which really hasn't been mentioned yet, in the event that head levels decline in the freshwater aquifer. State-regulated wetlands are adjacent to this property based on a review of the state wetlands match, which is a comment I made earlier. How will the environment be protected? Water aquifers, recharge systems, stormwater runoff, silt management, wetlands, and coastal ecosystems. This is one slide where I have a repeat, so my apologies for that again. I'm not going to read all of this. I have a personal background in water treatment and wastewater treatment, and familiar with wastewater systems, underground percolation systems, and I know there are very, very satisfactory systems out there that the developer will probably employ if this goes forward, or any developer, if this goes forward. There's examples all up and down Route 1 for under parking lot, underground percolation systems. So those systems, EcoPonds, et cetera, are all available, and they're spelled out in DENRECs and the Conservancy District's regulations. We've talked to them. It's a complicated process. If this development goes forward, it's going to be the largest site in Sussex County to date. It's going to be costly, but we have to trust the developer if this goes forward, and we have to trust the DENREC people and the Conservancy District. They're highly professional. I'm very impressed with their knowledge and awareness and follow-up. They've helped us in Painter's Mill tremendously with some stormwater management situations that we've had, which is reaching a 10-year level at this point, which I'm personally involved with. But it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be expensive, and I think the proper agencies will do their job to make sure it's done correctly. So even though I have these things up there as concerns, they're issues that will have to be addressed properly. My next slide is basically a repeat. You know, make your pitch, repeat your pitch, summarize your pitch. So I'm not going to review all of this again, but let me move on to some other comments that I did want to make. I'll leave that up for now. I was going to review all of the public service increases that Mike presented, increased troopers, public safety, first responders, firefighters, first aid, and who's going to pay for all of that. The cost difference between what the developer is going to provide and what the true cost of this traffic modification is going to require, and let's face it, in the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, however long this would take, if this goes forward, is going to be, the inflation is going to raise it 25% to 30% easily. So $8 million is going to be a much lower ratio of the total eventual cost for the overpass and the associated road systems that are going to be required. So you've answered that question, Mr. Chairman. The residents and taxpayers are going to pay the tab. The fact remains that these items will require public funding, and eventually we welcome the addition of these services. We need and appreciate them, and responsible citizens accept the fact to maintain our lifestyle and safety. OTC will create a major spike in demand and need, not the gradual progression we recognize as normal. And we all of these resources, among others, be ready and available when needed. Will all of these resources, among others, be ready and available when needed? We all know too well how slowly the wheels of bureaucracy turn. The solution takes a long time to match the need. Again, I want to repeat that there's many letters and petitions from concerned citizens in opposition to this application are filling your file, as well as the pages of the Cape Gazette. These documents are very considered and convey meaningful concerns with intelligence and accuracy. These people, as well as many of those present this evening, and untold others in our area, are not radicals who oppose anything that means change. They would embrace those changes that are necessary to correct the current and future deficiencies in our infrastructure and public services, if they had the confidence in knowing that will actually happen. Surely there are those who support this application with the associated shopping center development, but the key to meaningful opinions is knowing, understanding, and communicating what this site looks like and all of the associated consequences that it brings. Now, our situation has been compared to a battle between David and Goliath. Now, back in the day, the money was on Goliath, but we know how that turned out. And my esteemed colleague, who is not here tonight, I'm going to quote from him, and he states, "Ask not what the county can do for us, but what we can do for the county. We're working hard to do so." In conclusion, we respectfully ask that the Sussex County Commission vote a unanimous no on this application. Now, my colleague put in the word unanimous, but I'd be happy with a simple majority.
There's an old saying in Sussex County is that you can do anything you want if you get three votes.
I'll take them. Thank you very much for your courtesy and for your for allowing us to participate in this process. You've allowed a number of us to get up here and make our individual presentations. They were hopefully well thought out, and they have meaning for you all. And I also thank you personally for allowing me to make my second appearance here this evening. I appreciate it. One more final person I'd like to introduce. Kenny Hopkins, who is probably the most affected resident in regard to this OTC application. So, Kenny, thank you.
Okay, can we have the lights back, please?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, wake up, everybody.
Okay. There, my farm is located right directly behind it.
We need to give us.
Okay, I'm Kenny Hopkins. My farm is directly right.
We know who you are, but the tape doesn't. So okay, good. Thanks, Kenny. Go ahead.
There, I'm the son of a third generation farmer. I have grown up learning about the land and how to make it grow. I have been raised to appreciate it. I have spent many hours in a milk house with my father and endless hot summer days in a field baling hay. I learned at an early age that the ground is only as useful as we allow it to be. The more we allow it to grow, the more it gives back to us. Sussex County has been known as a farming community. It's important that we continue to educate the community about the importance of farming. But the more importantly, we must preserve it. We need to save the land in order to allow our children to see how the food grows and prosper from Mother Nature. With preserving the farmland, you will also be preserving the wildlife. Where the Overbrook Town Center wants to be built is in the middle of a prosperous wildlife habitat. The Great Marsh is located closely behind the town center where it wants to be built. With the runoff alone, this is a great nature's habitat will be compromised. With any massive development or mall that is built, the wildlife vacates the area. Their once natural habitat becomes invaded by strip malls, parking lots, trash that will soon accumulate the surrounding areas. My home is located behind the town center where the town center wants to be built. The house that I am living in, it was built in 1860 and my wife and I worked very hard to remodel it and preserve its history. This is our first home together, and this is where we have raised our daughter, Natalie. My daughter has been able to grow up in a home where farming, wildlife, and appreciation for the earth has always been important. She was able to play in the yard and not have to worry about oncoming traffic and strangers. Natalie could play with our dogs in the field or take them back to the ponds to swim. She was able to be a child. Both my wife and I would like to pass this family farm down to her and through the generations. We want her to teach her kids that the land and wildlife living on it. But I am concerned that if this town center were to be built, we will not be able to do that. I am concerned that the family farm will be lost, just like the land in front. Thank you.
All right, sir, we thank you. Okay, who's next? Mrs. Granke, did you want to speak this evening?
May I?
You may. Please, come on up. Okay, we'll get to you.
I'm sorry I'm slow.
That's quite all right. You're worth waiting for.
Nobody has signed this for you. There you go. I'm Mabel Granke, and I live in Rehoboth Beach.
Yes, you do.
And one of the reasons I'm here is because Rehoboth Beach will be impacted. While the applicant was speaking, my fervent hope was that you all did not believe in pre-organization. And I am very much encouraged because of the presentation that you've already had, which I believe has been very careful and very thoughtfully put together. And I'm grateful to all those who worked on it. And the reason I'm here tonight is because I feel, for one thing, that we need to begin to recognize why many of us chose to live here and why people come here to visit and also even plan to move here. And it's because within minutes or walking distance, we can go east to the ocean and beaches or visit our state parks or go west to take advantage of the resources of the inland bays, fishing, crabbing, kayaking, or boating. We can park the car and walk or bike. I can't anymore, but there are many who can, thank goodness. The added benefit is the commercial corridor between Five Points and Dewey Beach that affords the opportunity to buy whatever we need from the standpoint of food to building supplies, and we can even have some fun. And then the question becomes, why sacrifice agricultural land that also provides environmental protection for the Great Marsh for a shopping mall that would create dangerous increase in traffic congestion, unnecessary impervious surface, unplanned, unneeded commercial intrusion in an area of planned residential development? And I beg you to think in terms of this is 2015. And since the land use plan was adopted in 2008, the tremendous increase in development that has taken place has to be taken into consideration. Further, the cumulative economic impact cannot be ignored. There are three communities that represent a major reason to visit Sussex County. They're Milton, Lewis, and Rehoboth Beach. Route 16 and Cave Neck Road, which is Route 88, traffic represents a direct impact on Milton. The Route 1 corridor represents direct impact on Lewis and Rehoboth. We already have dangerous congestion and failing intersections with the constant specter of delayed emergency response time. And I beg you to think in terms of, you look at the geography of Route 1. It is our lifeline. And it is the only access and the way to leave this area that many of us have. It does not matter how many dollars the developer is willing to spend in supposed transportation improvements The consequences of destructive land use planning cannot be overcome. And the carrot of 1,400 jobs, or whatever the number is, I volunteer at the Community Resource Center. And the minute the traffic, in terms of people coming to the shopping areas that we already have, is devastating, because people, these are minimum wage jobs, and people are lucky if they get 20 hours a week, which means that some of them are struggling to even survive. They come to us because they need help with rent or electricity or medicine, whatever it is, in order to be able to survive this time. And it happens. It's going to happen. And so what I'm saying tonight to you is, this developer needs to go back home and redevelop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Granke. Mr. Tyler. Okay.
Don't clap. You'll get me in trouble.
Well, that, Mrs. Granke, you're the one person I'll make an exception for. Okay, now you hope you've all got it out of your system now, because we're not clapping anymore, okay? Especially for this guy here.
My name is Michael Tyler. I live in Lewis. You want to know how long I've lived there?
Sure, tell us.
I've been in Lewis for 23 years, and I've lived in Delaware for almost 50.
There you go.
And I took Mabel to dinner for her 90th birthday a couple weeks ago.
Oh, my goodness. Happy birthday, Mrs. Granke.
I'll be brief, too. Sussex County has long been recognized as the county with the most incorporated municipalities. Approving or voting for this complex will change the character of our county as the one with the most shopping malls in the state. And I think, as Mabel puts out, you know, the developer, you know, he does not have a vested right to build this development, okay? According to the map that I have, I don't know what Mr. Fuque was using. The existing land use shows this is open, as this is agriculture and undeveloped lands, according to my plan. Also, for future land use plan, if you look at the commercial properties that are there, those commercial properties would be like a fly swatter. His commercial property would be like a sledgehammer. They're just so small. You know, the Schaefer's Bike Shop and those little places like that, they can't compare. So this is really out of character and out of scale for what they're trying to promote. We've seen the Route 1 corridor south of Nassau Bridge turn into, turn on anywhere USA. And you talk about traffic backup. I'll tell you that I've seen traffic back up to Argos Corner on Route 1. Okay? Now, I'm a cyclist. I don't bike on Route 1 that far north, but I do bike on Route 1 south, going south, and I bike on all the roads. I bike on that road to Lewis, Milton, and generally there's not that much traffic, but I can see it increasing and getting worse. You know, traffic has always been, oh, yeah, it's really bad, but the engineers say we can fix that. And maybe they can, but I don't know that they can as far as safety, health, and welfare. I think these are going to be jeopardized with a scale of the complex that is being planned here. So for the health and safety of the people who make the county go should be really the chief priority for you. You have a vested right to protect us and to help us in our health and welfare. Denigrating these conditions is unnecessary and should not be accepted. I urge you to recommend denial of this out-of-scale development application and keep it AR1. I'm not going to say much more, but I could also quote your traffic, the traffic on Route 1, and it says, I haven't looked at this in a long time, as you know, because I've had my own problems and concerns that I've been dealing with, but I think I won't find it here. The AADT of Route 1 is 60,000 cars, okay? what is this going to do to that 60,000 cars? How is it going to affect the traffic and the people who are coming to the area? As someone said, or everybody's focused on getting to where they want to get. And Rodney, you mentioned it to me some months ago. Who's going to shopping malls these days? The young people, they pull out their phone, they pull out their iPad, they go on the computer. That's how they shop. My son furnished his house online. You know, he just got everything on the web. I said, really? You didn't go? No, I don't need to go to shopping malls. Or they'll go to a shopping mall, look, and then they'll go find it online. So let's think about those kinds of things, too, and the meaning, you know, what they mean to us here who live here. Thank you very much for allowing me to talk.
Okay. All right, sir, over here. And then we'll take one from this side.
Good evening. My name is Rick Moore. I represent the Lewis Community Partnership, and I'd like to say for the record, I endorse on the behalf of the partnership all of the work of the OTC Coalition. Okay. We've been collaborating with them to spread their word and get more people involved in their website and activities. So I would fully endorse their expertise and eloquence in conveying a great deal of information. And I will do my best not to repeat any of that.
Okay.
Instead, I want to focus on a couple of points and to try and draw a couple of visuals. First, the Supreme Court decided nearly 90 years ago that local jurisdictions have the right and authority to establish and enforce comprehensive plans and to use these to restrict development. And you were at the same meeting I was when we discussed some of that last week. Delaware law extends that through its establishment of planning commissions and a further legal authority for comprehensive plans. Sussex County has an existing comprehensive plan under which the property under consideration is properly and correctly zoned as AR1. The property is in the Delaware Coastal Zone, which the legislature saw fit to protect under the Delaware Coastal Zone Act. For political reasons, that act only addressed industrial and not retail or residential uses. However, that is precisely why a comprehensive plan is necessary and essential to augment the restrictions of the Coastal Zone Act. There is already overdevelopment within this zone based on scientifically projected sea level rise, climate change, and habitat fragmentation consequences. It is not advisable to continue reducing protected areas, including agricultural areas serving the growing population of the region and the nation. The Sussex County Comprehensive Plan puts a premium on this very goal, and I would emphasize that because I listened very carefully in the earlier presentation by the developer speaking to the question of appropriate for CR1 zoning under applicable criteria, the applicable legislative standards, and the rational, non-arbitrary manner of making a decision. Now, concerning the specific cited intention for rezoning to put in an 850,000 square feet plus retail development with 5,000 parking spots and projected daily vehicle trips that stretch to some 87 plus miles if you put them end to end. And that's an easy calculation for anyone to make. And I would want to try and get everyone to visualize this for a moment, because from the data submitted in the PLUS submission to the state, you can extract these numbers. Just multiply the numbers they submitted on daily trips, which is fewer than what was displayed from other data. Just multiply that times the average vehicle length, which is 189 inches. And that's how you come up with 87.7 miles when you put that end to end. So imagine that in your mind. Or just take the hourly traffic projections, about 1,500 cars, and that makes about 4.5 miles, which, by the way, is about the length from Cave Neck Road to the entrance to Rehoboth Beach. So the entire area where the Tanger Malls are located, currently with their approximately 506,000 square feet of retail space, would be blocked if you ran those cars on an hourly basis just between this proposed development and the entrance to Rehoboth. We already know what the experience is like. Everyone here has driven out there on any particular day around the year. So just as has already been said, I'll add all that in. So those are two visuals. One is the 4.5 mile, and that's bumper to bumper. You know, put one bumper against the other and just stretch all those cars together, and that's what you get. So the hourly rate is 4.5 miles in length, and the daily rate is 87.7 miles. And that's not the peak that's been projected in their numbers. So I would suggest there is no rational reason to introduce a development almost as large as Christiana Mall. And let's look at those numbers. Christiana Mall is 1.2 million square feet. They're proposing over 850,000 square feet. Now add that to the existing Tanger Malls and you exceed the size of Christiana Mall. But where is Christiana Mall? On Interstate 95. So look at all the contiguous, highly populated areas that that draws on with a major transportation route designed for that purpose. And think about how those roadways run in order to get that traffic into and out of Christiana Mall. So we're suggesting to essentially create more retail space than that, that completely surrounds Lewis. Now, I'm here on behalf of the Lewis Community Partnership, and I want to emphasize that those of us who live in Lewis are aware that already we only have three ways in and out, and those would be completely blanketed by the existing congestion between Lewis and Rehoboth on one side, and then the addition of something that's how many times larger than that, less than a couple of miles to the north. And I would also suggest, because my area of expertise is systems and management of systems. And when you begin increasing the numbers, you don't have simple arithmetic increases in problems. You know, it's like climate change. You know, you start going up an exponential curve. You get the marginal value of congestion. So you don't have simple arithmetic increases of road accidents, of delays, et cetera, et cetera. What you have is an exponential increase in those to the point where you can literally get gridlock. And many of us have experienced that out on Route 1 without this particular project being built. It's entirely possible. And when you have gridlock, you don't have emergency vehicles getting through. You don't have evacuations when Sandy is blowing in. You don't have any of that. And in an emergency, by the way, we would have all that extra congestion added to the fray. And I would mention, you know, there's a little historical note because development isn't something new. It's something that we've been doing in the United States for several hundred years now. So we have a lot of experience with it. And we have a lot of experience with low-lying areas that are in areas around rivers and so forth. And we can look at what happens. You know, it's entirely possible to follow the exact logic of continuing to concentrate development in areas that are already developed. And what do you get? New York City, Long Island, New Jersey, and the areas that were directly hit by, oh, by the way, that storm that was supposed to directly hit Lewis, Sandy. Did anyone look at the effects of that? So let's congest it some more down here and create a real nightmare because we don't have any of the urban capacity that they have there. What we have is local rural capacity that we're going to clog by that exponential increase in congestion where we create not only gridlock, but catastrophe and disaster. And in the lessons of history, there's an old quote that goes something to the effect of, history does repeat itself the first time as tragedy, the second time as farce. But I would like to suggest that this proposition for development is not funny at all. It's something that would harm everyone who lives here. It would harm the property values. It would harm the possibilities of getting served by an already overtaxed system for human and social services, as well as all our first responders. And we've had testimony to the effect of many people in these areas of service we have here volunteer. Well, how many more volunteers do we have? When you start increasing the demand with volunteers, you know, it's not just a matter of paying for the training and things like that, but it's a matter of how far do you stretch volunteerism and expect to have an effective response. So the point I would want to leave you with is that first and foremost, the responsibilities of a planning commission are not simply to hear proposals for development, but to start, first of all, with what the comprehensive plan under law and under Supreme Court decisions and under precedents already set is supposed to be. It is the consensus of a community. It reflects what a community intends, and it is the guidance for the planning commission's decisions. It's not just that you listen to a proposal because someone wants to develop something, but you apply that criteria and that consensus in the best interests of the community. And oh, by the way, in the state law, it says you can hire experts. You know, what's happened here is volunteers have come forth to lend of their expertise to try and persuade you to make the right decision. But you as a commission should also be hiring the experts to tell you precisely these things, regardless of what a developer proposes. Because that plan is not there to simply say, bring to us anything you propose because it's in the best interest because you propose it. It's just like the matter of the $8 million suggested as a contribution toward the roadway. Well, I have a neighbor who does a lot of work down here as a civil engineer. And he's one of the people who will probably be consulted on this particular highway project. And he suggested to me that the actual cost is more likely to be $18 to $20 million. So where does that difference get filled in from $8 million to the true cost of what it would mean to build a highway complex there to, quote, speed up traffic heading into exactly what's been described, that bottleneck at Five Points? And the existing annual congestion that lasts all season long. That's what you have to think about. So I suggest to you that you need to do more than just entertain what the developer proposes to you and just have to live with what very expert and eloquent volunteers have testified to in the facts, but dig deeper. Because what you're getting in these proposals is not adequate to serve the public and the people of this fair county. Thank you.
All right, sir. Somebody from this side? All the way in the back with your hand up. Come on. You can go next.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm John Gallus. I live in Vincent Overlook. It's a new development.
Yep.
And I can't speak as well as some of these other people. I'm not a professional at anything.
You're doing well so far.
When I sat and listened to the applicant's proposal, it's almost like the state demands that you approve this. The county expects you to approve it. And thank God these other gentlemen were here to refute some of that because I was ready to go home saying, I must be right. you've got it. You people are all in a terrible position here. You've got everybody waiting for you. You've got all this weight from up above hanging. You've got all us sitting on the other side saying no. The only thing I can really speak to, the traffic's been discussed so many times, is quality of life. My wife and I moved here because it reminded us of where we came from. We had farms around us. We had cows across the street. We had bears in the backyard. Not always a good thing, but they were there. We had coyotes running around even. Wow. But that's why we came down here. There were farms. There's a residential area. There isn't any big congestion. Now, on Sunday mornings, to go to St. Jude's, thank God there's a trooper out there, especially in the summer, to work the traffic lights so you can get across Route 1, especially Sunday morning when everybody's coming home. And if this does turn out to be the shopping mecca that everybody says, then You're also going to have to do 16 through Ellsworth and Milton. You're going to have to do 9 and 404 all the way up. You're probably going to have to try to fix 9 or the King's Highway part of 9 from the ferry, because evidently everybody will be coming over there as well. I don't want to ruin how nice everything is here. I don't know how else to put it. And I'm sorry I didn't wear a jacket and tie as well.
Oh, that's fine.
But everything here, it's a beautiful area. You've got 7 miles of shopping down there once you get over to Nassau Bridge. I just don't see a need for it. If you want to develop the area, and the man who owns it, obviously it's his right to sell it. Maybe you need something that doesn't have a whole lot of traffic on weekends, or maybe something that doesn't have a whole lot of traffic in the summer. The only thing I can think of is if you put a school or something there, there's limited traffic there in the summer, on the weekends, and it's off most of the time in the summer. And obviously, we have enough schools. We could have summer school someplace else if we had to. Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Thank you, sir. All right, sir. You're up.
Good evening. My name is John Vincent. I own the farm to the north and east that's in the Agricultural Preservation Program.
Yes, sir.
I don't get to live here all the time, and I didn't know I was going to be here to make this meeting.
Okay.
I live most of the time in Florida, but I'm offshore. I work on ships. I build desalinization and wastewater treatment systems. I work through the Caribbean building land-based systems as well. Mm-hmm. My degree is in biology and chemistry, and I wanted to give you a little bit of a viewpoint from the biology, chemistry, and farmer side of things.
Okay.
What Mr. Clark brought home so well was that this project meets all the bureaucratic criteria. It's got it. The only thing I can do is say this would be a prime example where the operation will be a tremendous success and the patient will be dead. The patient in this case is the Great Marsh. The drainage that goes between Kenny Hopkins' farm and my farm is a very small drainage. At the end closest to the property in question, Kenny and I could probably throw a baseball through at each other, or maybe even a rock or whatever else. So it's real tight. To give you an example of what I fear in wastewater, let's just say they developed 90 acres of this and it was on solid surface, an impervious surface. Well, 90 acres, and let's say we had a 4-inch rain. We've had 4-inch rains this winter. We have them in the summer. We even have some 6-inch rains. How much water comes off of a 90-acre impervious surface? 4 inches? How much water do you think? Want to guess? Take a guess?
It's too late to guess. Just tell us.
9,776,000 gallons, give or take a few. Okay. Now, some of this is going to go to deep wells. That's real great. Super. But let's just say 500,000 gallons is going to find its way to that drainage. Our watershed breaks right at Gravel Hill and goes east and west. When you go east of Route 1, we're the last stop before that water heads out on the marsh. Now, as far as all the groundwater recharge that I'm hearing about, I got 4 chicken houses. You can see them right there. Well, our shallow water wells that were 24 feet, which my father had for his dairy herd, his grandfather had it, his great-grandfather had it. That farm came about, to give you a little history, Milton was founded in 1807. My great-great-grandfather started in 1848. My sister has got a daycare center down at Dagsboro, Mother Goose. My brother's a minister over in Laurel. So we're in the community very heavily. And when my dad died quite suddenly, my mom asked me to come up, and she said to me, said, John, would you keep the farm as a farm? Of course, milking cows is a lot like slavery. You're there 365 days a year, 2 times a day, whether rain, snow, misery, sick. Pop didn't care what you was. You had to get out there them cows. So I couldn't keep cows. But what do you tell your mom? Sussex County woman, raised 5 children. When I left to go to Vietnam, I watched her hang clothes on the clothesline in a snowstorm because she didn't have a dryer. So I gave the money to my brother and I said, look, buy mom a dryer for Christmas. I won't be around. That's what you got. So the community, I've seen these things happen. When I was a little kid, very small, my sister used to walk me through the woods towards Jake Richards' property, going north. And there was an irrigation pond there that is the outflow of Fisher Creek. Fisher Creek comes right up in back of Weiss Chapel Church. Now, that drainage that's just before you get to the church goes through my grandmother's field and through my field. In other words, two riparian buffers. Now, when I was a kid, it was a two-lane highway. That was a long time ago. But she used to walk me through the woods, and we'd go to the outfall of that pond, and there was freshwater eels there, and you could catch them. And you catch them, put them in a quart jar, and take them to school for show and tell in Miss Wells's class. Oh, it was great. You had something neat. Chase a girl with one, you know, and it's squiggling and everything. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
And how does this relate to this change of zone question we're talking about? And I'm going to ask you to wrap it up. You're a fascinating speaker, but there's a bunch of other people that want
to
speak.
But when they put the dual highway in.
Okay. So we're all the way back to the single lane Route 1, okay.
Yeah, they put the dual highway in. Okay. We still get that runoff from almost all the way down to the corner of Route 88 up to Weiss Chapel Church.
Right.
All the freshwater eels disappeared.
Okay.
Wonder what happened there. They don't come back. This drainage, when it starts getting in to levels of what we call TOC, total organic carbon from runoff, particularly aromatic and aliphatic hydrocarbons, they're going to migrate through that soil, and they're going to go into that estuary, and that little creek, that little bitty drainage that's not even really a listed creek, joins Fisher out on the marsh. Then you're going to have all that total organic carbon coming through there, and I've seen everybody's approvals and where it's at, but I've not seen any water analysis from anybody. I've got them. I run analysis on that, and it kind of worries me. Being a fourth-generation farmer, the load's there. You know, you've got to pass this on to your children. My son's there now. Mm-hmm. But when you change that water quality, as things changed, our shallow water wells disappeared. Some of our wildlife's disappeared. It's gone. It's not coming back. And then you're going to feed this water on out. It joins Cool Spring Creek and then flows into the Broadkill. And when you take a plane in here and they're going to take you into Philadelphia, they turn you right by Lewis. You can look down and see the farm. You can also see Roosevelt Inlet. And there's a huge alluvial fan out there. And it keeps getting bigger. It's all the sediment washing out of the Broadkill. My marsh is gone by 20 feet. The creek is becoming shallower and wider. Wake action, higher flows. It's all going out, but it's going out to Roosevelt Inlet. We used to have live colonies of oysters out there in the South Fork of the Old Forked River, right on the Great Marsh. They're gone. They're gone. This was when I was an adult. So consequently, these changes happen chemically, and you don't see the bureaucratic entities pulling up all these approvals and statistical studies. For the most part, they've not even been back there. They've not seen it. And as a farmer, when you've got increased traffic, like we see it now sometimes in the summer, you make a lot of friends out on Route 1. They come by and wave at you. They just don't use their whole hand. And if you really want to travel on Route 1, what you have to do is get up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning and go down Route 1 with your disc and your Landstar or whatever you've got that's 20 foot wide or folds up so it's only maybe 18 foot wide. And you go down there that time of day because you know that some of your friends, you don't know how crazy some of these people are. And they pull in front of you when you've got a big dual-wheel tractor or a combine and then want to hit their brakes, you know, because they think you're in the way. So when you increase the probability of traffic, that's not a really appealing as a farmer. As a chemist, all the runoff, which is going to go into the soil, it's going to make its way back through that little creek, and it's going to go right on out and effectuate more things. And that's there for proof. I can show you the surveys on the marsh. I had Charlie Murphy do them. I asked, where's the other 20 foot of my land? Gone. So I appreciate your time very much.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. All the way in the back.